Okay? Gene certainly made a resolution 25 years ago to serve this congregation, and he has done it ably, and we will miss your influence within the eldership. Of course, you join me now as not being a part of the eldership, but I certainly did not have 25 years like you did. But like Gene said, Gene and Sheila will certainly continue to be a very active part of this church, and they are not retiring from involvement and participation and offering what they do here at Northeast. We love you and appreciate you both very, very much. And why don't we just tell them thank you right now by doing this. All right, I'm going to ask somebody to give me a pat on the back. All right, Dave, I see you right here. You just give me a good pat on the back here. All right, I appreciate that. I made a commitment about 3 months ago to exercise on average of 5 days a week, and I have maintained that commitment for 3 months now, and so I feel better doing that. I certainly know, as Nick mentioned earlier, being an old man, that it's especially important that I take care of myself and involved in exercise, and I'm trying to do that. Now I need another volunteer. I need somebody to kick me in the seat of the pants, okay? All right, we'll pass on that one. That might be a little bit awkward. I also made a personal commitment about 3 months ago, actually around the same time when I was just trying to get my life together more in a lot of ways, made a commitment to more focused, quiet time with God, including journaling. And I did really well for a while, but I also noticed that the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've gotten off track with that, and I can certainly feel it in my own personal life in terms of where I am spiritually, where I'm focused, what I'm doing, what I'm not doing. A lot of people make resolutions, and by the way, you don't have to wait till January 1st to make a New Year's resolution. In fact, I think in some ways, personally, that making such a big deal about making a resolution on the 1st of January sometimes causes people not to do what they need to be doing right now. So it's December 5th, and I say, you know, January 1st, I'm going to start doing the right thing. It really doesn't make sense. And when we're talking about this whole idea of rebooting and second starts, and we're talking about resolutions, I think we understand that any time is a good time to make a commitment to do the right thing. But some people use January 1st to do that. And so we have some in this congregation who need to quit smoking. We have some in this congregation who need to take better care of themselves physically or exercise. And you could just go right down the list of those to take care of our finances better. In fact, I was reading an article, this is not this week, but last week I was reading an article that was in a magazine, and there was a study at Marist College that about 44% of people on the first of the year, they make New Year's resolutions. But if you know what I know, and you probably do, a lot of those resolutions and commitments, they aren't followed through with. In fact, I was reading that about 10% of the people who make a commitment to, for example, start saving money, at the first of the year they make that resolution. By the end of the year, only 10% of them are actually doing that. And the decision to exercise. Gym memberships are purchased like crazy in January. But by 6 months, half of the people who made that commitment to exercise more, well, they're not doing it. And talking about the decision to quit smoking, that's an even tougher one. I was reading something from a study that was, I forget where the study came from, but that study said that it takes an average person about 10 to 20 times to finally quit smoking. Now, in this whole idea of starting over and redos, I know there's a point that sometimes we get frustrated with doing do-overs. Do you ever feel like you're tired of doing do-overs? It's like, I'd like to reach a point where I don't have to start over again. Or I get discouraged and I'm tempted to give up. Or I lose hope. But listen, Jesus calls us to persevere in the face of obstacles, in the face of failure, in the face of not doing what I made the promise to do, and here I am doing it again, or whatever it might be. Satan wants us to be discouraged. Satan wants us to lose hope. And God is calling us to greater things because we have hope. And so in this whole idea of following through and starting over and starting fresh, and in terms of being able, as I talked a couple of weeks ago, about forgiving ourselves and forgiving others, that's an important step in this whole process. Because if I can't learn to forgive others or forgive myself, I'm going to get so discouraged, I'm just going to quit. So, what are some things related to this passage this morning that I need to remember that's going to help me and help others get done what I need to get done? Number one, we need to remember that we bear our own burdens. And in that sense, we're responsible for ourselves. We need to understand that we need to carry our own load. I need to understand that I am accountable for me, that you're not accountable for me in the most important sense. I'm accountable and I'm responsible before God. And I have to take account for my own decisions, what I do, what I don't do, in terms of doing what I need to do. It's understanding that I want to try to avoid the tendency to blame others for the areas I may be having problems or making excuses for why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because as Paul encourages us and encourages the people he wrote to back then, in this context of burden bearing, he says, you need to understand this. You need to bear your own load. And part of that, he says, that we shouldn't deceive ourselves. Each one of you should test his own actions, and then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to somebody else. That's something else I can do when it comes to understanding that I'm accountable before God. I can quit comparing myself with others. And we can always find somebody who is worse than us, and then we beat ourselves up because of that. Or we can always find somebody who's better than us or more skilled than us, and then that gives us an excuse for not trying or maybe wanting to push things aside. Quit comparing yourself to others. And it works on both sides. I think there are some people who have a tendency in doing that to look at others, and then they see where they're not, and they want to beat themselves up to the point that they just get down in a rut and discouraged. And then there are others who feel quite satisfied with where they are. They see others not being able to do certain things or having a tough time or whatever it is, and I'm doing pretty good. But obviously, the standard ultimately is not us comparing ourselves with each other. It's us understanding that we have a calling before God, and we are called before Him to aim for the best in God and who we are in Christ, and not make excuses along the way. Another thing, certainly, that we can do is we don't need to depend on others what we need to do for ourselves. And there are ways that we need to grow up. You think about a little child. I think about Ike and how he's grown and developed. And he just recently learned how to walk just about September or October. And I think about the fact that someone like little Ike or another little baby is not going to be able to do what they're doing just in terms of walking if their parents did everything for them. There's a point that a child has to do certain things on their own. And there are times when I have to accept my responsibility to do something that I may be tempted to lean upon somebody else to do it when I need to do it myself. This past Thanksgiving, we had some friends and the whole family. We had a big gathering at our house. And traditionally, on Friday, everybody goes out to shop except some of us. And I'm the one that chooses not to go out shopping on Friday. At this time, Ike was kind of going through some serious parental anxiety. When he was separated from Andrew or separated from Keela, he would tend to cry and he would whine. And, well, they asked me, since I wasn't going shopping, they asked me if I wouldn't take care of Ike. And I know it doesn't seem like a very big deal. But he was going through this anxiety stage, and he's crying and whining, and I did not want to do it. But I didn't say that. I finally agreed to do it, but I dreaded doing it. And they finally left, and they said, do this when we leave, if he asks about mommy, if he asks about this. And it turned out being fine. And so about 2 hours went by, they sent a text saying, we'll be there in just a little bit. And I was just relieved that everything was going so well. And then just about that time, I lifted him up, and he had a poopy diaper. And I'm thinking, what do you do in a situation like that? Do I just wait? They say they're on their way. Or I hadn't changed a poopy diaper since our kids were just little babies, and I didn't do very many of them then. So I waited and waited. 10 minutes went by, and finally my conscience got to me, and I changed my first diaper in about, I don't know, 30-something years. And I want to tell you, it really wasn't that bad. I needed to do that myself. It would have been a lot easier for me to wait till they got home and it was about 30 minutes later. It wouldn't have killed Ike to sit in that poop for 30 minutes, I don't think. It would have? All right. Well, listen, I did it, so. But sometimes when it comes to this whole idea of taking responsibility, sometimes things are a little bit more serious than changing a diaper. And this whole idea of doing something ourselves that we're not depending on others to do. And I thought a lot about this whole idea of taking responsibility, and I think about the groups like AA and other 12-step groups that have this whole idea of accepting that one is powerless over the power of alcohol or sex addiction or other kinds of a drug addiction or whatever it is out there, gambling. We've had people here and here at Northeast, and I know we have people here at Northeast who are part of 12-step groups and dealing with some of these things. And I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception about what this whole idea of admitting you're powerless against something, because we are powerless on our own against the power of sin. We can't do it on our own, whether we're dealing with a serious addiction or not. We still have to rely upon God. And so in the 12-step program, the first step is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And then you think about, well, they're making excuses for how they are. They say, I'm an alcoholic and there's nothing I can do about it. But I want us to pay attention to the steps that are a part of this program. And actually, it parallels what we're called to do as Christians all the time. Step number 3, I made a decision to turn my will over to God. Number 4, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, we admitted to God and ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings, made a list of all the persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends with them, made direct amends with such people whenever possible, continued to take personal inventory, sought through prayer and meditation to improve, and then it goes on. And so the point of not depending upon others, what we need to do ourselves, we individually need to understand in bearing our own burdens that we are responsible for ourselves. But even with that, there's this idea of taking steps to do the things that we need to do to move in the right direction. Because quite frankly, we make those decisions ourselves, or we want to move in a certain direction, but we can't always do that ourselves. And hence, AA and other groups like that, they believe in this power of community in doing what they need to do. Some loads are too heavy to bear by yourself. Some loads can't be borne by yourself alone. And so we bear our own burdens, but we understand that we nor others can always carry all the load. And hence, Paul also says here, really it's two main points: bear your own burdens, and the second one is bear one another's burdens. I think of the man in Luke chapter 5 who is lame, who finally gets a presence before Jesus, but he doesn't get there without four of his friends lifting up his mat and finding a way to get in the house to get that man in the presence of Jesus. He couldn't do it by himself. Others had to help lift him there. A couple of years ago, I read an autobiography by Martin Luther King Jr., and he talked about the trials and the struggles of the civil rights movement. And in that autobiography, you see coming through times when he felt alone in that struggle, in the sense that the leadership was so clearly, as time went on, even though he, in some ways, he said he didn't ask for it, he felt that burden from God. There were times when he felt alone in that struggle. But in another sense, he realized he wasn't alone, because he knew the power of that movement was by people working together to bring about civil rights and bringing about the changes that needed to be made. It wasn't just about Martin Luther King Jr. doing what he did. It was about what he did with others in accomplishing what God called him to do in that day and time. So, bear your own burdens. Some burdens are too heavy to be borne alone. And then the last point is we need to help other people bear their burdens. Okay, how do we do that? Well, we do that by not making other people's burdens worse than they already are. I think of what Jesus said in the book of Matthew when he's speaking to the Pharisees in Matthew 23. And he said in verse 3, "So you must obey them and do everything they tell you, but don't do what they do, for they don't practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them." Be someone who doesn't add to somebody's load, but be somebody who helps lift that load. And so the Pharisees are thrown out as an example by Jesus of somebody who is very quick to point a finger or be critical or not do something, and yet they weren't willing to make the changes they needed to make themselves or to help anybody else. And so in this whole idea of lifting weight, I think a good illustration is making a commitment to be a spotter. And what I mean by that is when you're lifting heavy weight and you're training, and by the way, a man named, with the last name Keneally, what's his name? I had it, Ryan Keneally, did the bench press, broke the record for the bench press in 2008. Guess how many pounds he lifted? Well, don't guess. 1,070 pounds. That's about 7 Grady's. That's a lot of weight. And I think about those who lift weights and are bodybuilders, and I think how a guy like Ryan Keneally can get where he is in lifting that kind of weight and that kind of load. The fact is, he didn't get there doing it all by himself. He got there with people helping him, and the spotter is the one who stands behind you as you're lifting that weight, and they're kind of helping you along, and if they're struggling, you help them just a little bit, but not too much, because they need to bear that load. But you're helping them do that. And while you're doing it, you're encouraging them, saying, come on, come on, come on, man, you can do it. I mean, I haven't lifted weights in a long, long time. But those who do it, they say that role is important, so important in lifting what you can lift, being a spotter, being an encourager, being somebody who says to somebody else, I believe in you. I believe that you can do it. Don't give up. Keep pushing. And one thing that will help us bear the burdens of others is this whole idea of watching our attitude in terms of judgment. And why I say that, you go back to the passage here in Galatians and look again at what Paul says when he says, encouraging someone who's caught in a sin, if you're spiritual, you should restore him gently, but watch yourself or you may also be tempted. There are several commentators, and I agree with the commentators on this point. I believe this idea of being tempted in terms of us helping others when they're struggling with whatever they need, in terms of us helping lift their burdens. I really believe that the being tempted here is the temptation of arrogance or pride or being judgmental in the sense of being more condemning of someone instead of helping them. Or having the attitude, I can't understand why they're struggling with this. I don't get it. I would never do something like that. How is it that they're struggling with that? I can't believe they're in such a mess. And so we say, I don't get it. I'd never do that. Or I just don't understand. They need to buck up and they're struggling with whatever it is, sin or depression or whatever it is. They just need to snap out of it. Sometimes they need somebody to bear that heavy load. Now, look at the homeless. How tempted are we sometimes? You know, they just really got themselves in that mess, and all they need to do is just get their act together and go get a job. Sometimes we can judge others, and we don't even realize it. We went to City Gospel Mission, a group of us, several months ago. And while we were there, this is the second time I went, we were sitting at a table, and there was a woman two tables away from us. Some of the women are invited in at that time. I know it's a place for men, but if there are families out there, anybody who's homeless, they can come. And she was so emaciated. And had sores on her arms and was so gaunt and thin and had sores on her face. And there was a burden in my heart to do something or say something to her. And I felt it. I feel like God was calling me to do that. And yet, I don't think it was judging her. I think it was more just being uncomfortable. What am I going to say? She's not sitting at my table. Maybe I'll say something to her a little bit later when we all kind of get up and start moving. And 10 minutes later, I look the other way. And she was gone. And I know there are other people who encouraged her and have said things to her and been an encouragement to her. And I pray that she gets her life back where it needs to be. But sometimes God is calling us, me right where I am, to do something. Several weeks ago, actually it's a couple of months ago, a brother is leaving church here on a Sunday morning, and he just leans over to me and put a hand on my shoulder, and he said, "Here, let's pray a minute." And so we prayed for 30 seconds. I don't know everything that moved him to do that, but I do know that it was the kind of spontaneous act of encouragement and hope and help that I hope and pray becomes more the fabric of who we are as a church. That we have more people who are over in that corner praying and encouraging each other and putting their arms around each other and asking others, "How are you doing?" and really waiting to find out how they're doing and then helping. God calls us to act. And God may be opening that door for you or me somewhere, and sometimes we say somebody else will do it. And then we have to realize that somebody else may be me. So I encourage you to give serious thought to taking that mission trip this summer and going to the meeting next Sunday. I encourage you to consider when we have lots of service things to do as a church this year and we're putting those plans together, don't just think somebody else will do it. I encourage you to make that decision yourself to take that step to help bear that burden of somebody else. It may just be praying with them. And understanding ultimately, yeah, we bear our own burdens. I'm responsible for me. I want to help others in bearing their load. But ultimately, whatever we're able to bear or accomplish is only because we're leaning upon Christ. By His power, amen. "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy loaded," Jesus says, "and I will give you rest." If you need burdens lifted, help or encouragement, whatever that need is, let us know as we sing.
Some glad morning.